Hello and welcome to the Scottish Football Show. Coming up, it's International Week and Norway can't crash a happy Hampden. Scotland prepare to party. You're such a basic pitch. Kilmarnock look for a change. And tickety split, Aberdeen rage at seat allocations for the League Cup final. I hope you've all been catching up with your K-pop, getting down and rowdy, or bolstering your German language skills ahead of next summer. I'm Andrew Slavin, your host through another great week in Scottish football, and we've got plenty to look forward to this one because, well, it won't go as far as pecking of cheeks, please, because we know that can look rather racy. But joining me, as ever, he's the man down under, the Paisley punter, the poor man's Bob Malcolm. It's Melbourne City head of creative, Finlay Mark. You all right, pal?
Yeah, to be a poor man's Bob Malcolm.
You're welcome.
Bob Malcolm's actually one of those players that you think of being an absolute diddy, but he actually had a pretty decent career for a player that was relatively limited. So sure, I'll take that. A poor man's Bob Malcolm.
Anyway, she's back with the gang, the Tartan Army Pied Piper, but day to day, she's the senior producer for TNT Sports. A big Scottish hello there to Laura Brannan. How are you, mate?
Hello, I'm all good. I want to know who I'm a poor man's version of.
I was gonna go
Claudio Caniggia because of the hair.
Claudio Caniggia, fair play.
At least I brushed it.
Yeah.
Does need a wash though, to be fair.
How are we, Laura? What have you been up to? Anything special?
No, nothing special at all.
Fuck me. What a start to a podcast.
Did you not spend a week in Madrid, basically?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was last week. That's why I couldn't be in the show last week. I was in Madrid.
Unbelievable, Finn. I mean, you make the podcast pretty much every week. I've made it even in Saudi Arabia, but Laura goes to Madrid. I just can't be arsed. Finn, what have you been doing, man?
Melbourne City had two games this week. Lost with a last-minute handball VAR penalty in the Asian Champions League. And then we're trailing 3-1 at home on Sunday with 2 minutes left on the clock and managed to snatch a 3-3 draw. So that was very exciting.
What do you do during the games? You just watch them?
Oh. This is all very boring chat, but basically at the moment, no, I don't watch them.
I'm interested.
Because at the moment they basically haven't had a videographer for a year, I'm making a lot of content for stuff that's not around the pitch on a match day. So there are various like hospitality lounges and packages and things like that. There's stuff that we do outside the stadium for families. So Sunday was a double header, both men and women's teams playing at Amy Park over the weekend. So there's stuff for families outside. There's like DJs,
see, this is
player signings, face paintings, all of that kind of stuff. So I was filming all of that and in what's known as the Melbourne Lounge for drinks and stuff like that so that we can make little VT packages to sell for future matches. All very exciting. But then once the game kicks off, yeah, I can go into our radio box and watch the game. So
nice one, man.
Yeah.
That's good.
That is interesting.
Yeah, that is. I just went to Madrid to film Jude Bellingham and he didn't play. So that's the extent of my work.
These things happen. You gotta take a risk, eh? Gotta take a risk.
The dogs bark and the caravan passes. The caravan keeps moving. The caravan keeps going.
Can we catch up on a few things? Because, Finn, I see there's been a developing story in a K-pop bonanza.
Yeah. So this was, it's actually a story from a couple of weeks ago, but we only brought it up on the show last week, feeling that it was maybe a bit out of date. Yeah. But it was a great story, which was the story of this K-pop band, Stacey, that went to, they were on an American tour while they were in Texas. Somebody's obviously said, oh, the one of the big sports teams here is Rangers. So they've Googled it and then inadvertently ended up wearing retro 90s Glasgow Rangers football tops, not Texas Rangers tops. Anyway, there was a slight development on this last week where they turned up at Ibrox. Rangers invited them over and then they came over. So they did, I think they met some fans at Edmiston House. They did a bit of a tour of the stadium and it's been a whole kind of drip feed of weird content that I don't really understand, but I think it's because it's for the young people. Throughout the week, but I was like, it just seemed like a bit of a PR open goal Rangers extended the invitation, they came. It's kind of worked out well, I think, for both parties. And I'm sure there'll be, you know, swathes of teenage Korean girls now running around Gangnam and other areas in Seoul, sporting Rangers shirts. So,
has Ibrox ever hosted a concert or event?
Oh yeah, loads. Harry Styles, I think, was the most recent one last year or the year before, which had the infamous incident of the guy falling off the main stand. Do you guys remember this?
Oh my God, no, I don't.
No,
I'll put the clip in here.
I would not have put Harry Styles' gigs down as being the rowdiest or the ones you go home at injuries.
Yeah, no, just wow. A guy fell off. I think he was okay. But a guy fell off the balcony of the main stand at Ibrox.
I take it he was being an idiot then, probably.
I don't know. I mean, you have to go some to jump off the front of that bit of the stand. So, yeah, but that was the overriding memory of gigs. So maybe there'll be a bit of a wait until the next one.
Exciting. Laura, you mentioned rowdy. There's been rowdy business going on this week because Robbie Nielsen is back in management.
That is a phenomenal segue, by the way. I've just got to put that in.
Thank you very much. I don't have many of them. But how good a move is that for him, by the way? I'm quite jealous. Imagine going out. His press conference was like on the pitch. It was like beautiful sunshine. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I don't think that's the headline, though. He's now the manager of Tampa.
Aren't we happy for Robert?
No. The headline here is Robbie Nielsen is now officially a fanny. Because I did not know this. But the Tampa Bay Rowdies fans are actually called fannies.
No.
And
oh my
they
God.
They have
Shut
bumper
up.
Stickers that say, honk if you love fannies. Rowdies have great fannies.
Oh my gosh. There's the name of the show right there.
Robbie Nielsen. I know he's been called it many times in his career, but he is now officially a fanny.
Well, he's the manager of fannies. He leads fannies and he develops fannies.
Hoping to score around some fannies, definitely.
Oh dear, this is...
Oh wow.
So this positive story just got better.
So well done, Robbie. Again.
I think what we need to do now, this is definitely something we have to focus on, is we'll do a fanny update every week just to check in and see how Robbie Nielsen's getting on over in Florida.
I always loved it. It was that Iron Brew advert, wasn't it? Yeah. And there was a guy in the hospital and he's just had a baby born. And they're like, what about fanny as a name? No, I can't call it fanny. Your granny was a fanny. It was amazing. Yeah, it comes from a long line of fannies. Now Robbie is number one fanny.
To be honest, I mean, given the options that he had, because apparently this came out that he was, he'd had chats about becoming potentially the Rangers assistant to Philippe Clement before he brought in his own guy. And I mean, it's a difficult choice to make, isn't it? Govan or Florida? You know, it's a tricky one. Of what
you said something
do.
Else there. Some people would think you'd be a fanny taking the Rangers job, though, as well.
Some Absolutely.
People. Yeah, amazing. Anything else stand out to you over the weekend? Any trains of thought?
Oh, we've got to put this one in just quickly. Andy Walker somehow turned into a train at the end of his update. The last minute goal for St Mirren to make it choo-choo.
This St Mirren side, they never give up. They fought to the death. Looks like they've got a point here. Choo-choo!
Obviously has to be the only way that Scottish football fans see that scoreline going forward now.
Choo-choo!
Did you see, this is Scottish football levels of pettiness, and I'm quite gutted it didn't happen here first, but did you see what happened in Peru?
Oh, so, that's amazing.
No, what
so
happened?
So I don't actually know the two teams, so forgive me for not being up on my Peru football knowledge, but basically the team that won the league were playing at their biggest rivals, and when the full-time whistle went, the hosts put the lights out.
Vamos a ver, señoras y señores. Plato Mordoña, final, final, final. Acabó el partido.
Immediately, as soon as the final whistle went, the entire stadium went into darkness.
Oh, that is
superb. So they couldn't have the party. Can you imagine if that happened in Scotland?
Weirdly, I actually remember, given I worked for a long time on the National League, non-league football, clubs that, you know, are scrimping and saving, literally to pay the Lecky bill. We were at Dover Athletic, and literally as soon as we went off air, which was probably about half an hour after full time, the whole stadium lights went out, but we were still de-rigging, still pulling cables out of the stadium and stuff like that.
Hamilton Accies have put the lights out on you quite often.
Aye, really? Saving on that Lecky, man. Oh, but that is quality shithousery, by the way. Superb. We should see more of that live on air.
There was just one other thing that I'd seen online, which I absolutely loved. I think most people have seen this as well. I think it was STV went around the streets of Glasgow and tried to gather some vox pops just from people in the street about VAR. And it gave rise to, I think, one of the best descriptions of VAR I've ever heard, which was the guy right at the top of the vox pop was talking about, you know, how things can often look worse on VAR than they really are if you freeze frame it. And he uses the line, a peck in the cheek can look like a porno.
It's slowing decisions down and you're looking at things in slow motion. Sometimes like a peck in the cheek can look like a porno. Do you know what I mean? Like when you slow things right down, it kind of distorts the actual, the contact or the type of tackle and stuff like that.
Just such a brilliant way of describing the forensic nature of VAR.
What a beautiful end. Let's end on a porno.
Start with a funny end on a porno.
Yes, Laura. Yes.
Regrets, not good laugh on it. So
I didn't find it funny.
What about some feel-good stories? Did you all see John McGinn explaining why he does his glassy celebration?
Oh, this was nice.
It's really lovely, isn't it?
I had no idea about this at all.
No, I didn't either. And I'm not usually big on these kind of nice stories. I've got a heart of gold. Of gold, not cold, not gold.
Unless it's one of your own boys, Laura.
I know, I'm not usually big on sob stories like this, but this is actually really nice. So his nephew has to wear special goggles when he plays football. And I mean, I can only imagine, if you're at school and you have to wear something like that to play football, I can imagine by default you're not the most popular kid in class. And I think it's really nice to think that one of the biggest footballers in the country, who is going to, you know, win us the Euros, has now set this trend to make wearing something like this that is not cool, really, really cool. And now who would probably be the class bullies are now the ones probably running around doing the same celebration, wanting to be like that. And they've suddenly just made this kid the coolest guy, this coolest wee boy in Scotland.
It is class, like. I mean, the fact that he doesn't need to do something like that, but because it's family as well, you know, it's extra special, and they'll all enjoy that. And I do love that he mentions that his friends all copy the celebration. It's just a lovely, lovely wee thing. But there was also kind of a really nice video put up online on Twitter from Danilo Finn announcing that he's going to be a dad.
I just find it quite funny that it tends to be a lot of the players that maybe come over from Europe and the ones that are already signed to like agencies and stuff, and they've very much got these kind of personal reels and channels that they put out a lot of content that's quite interesting. And Danilo's was one where I was like, you know, this is better production value than some of the stuff I've seen put out by actual clubs, you know.
Just watching it just now, like, what is going on here?
Can you describe it for us, Laura?
Yeah, this is, I mean, I'm watching it without sound just now, but basically this starts off with his girlfriend, his wife, his partner, whatever, doing a pregnancy test, and then gives him a box, and it's all homemade videos of him finding out that she's pregnant, and then going around telling the family all their reactions. It's a whole compilation. And now I'm a minute and a half in. He's now buying the toys. He's decorating the room for the baby. This is the whole journey. I'm watching a whole minute and a half journey of, she might give birth at the end. I'm not quite sure.
She doesn't, thank God. More fannies involved in this podcast, please.
I mean, you normally get the traditional baby scan photo and maybe a little pair of mini Converse or something to go with it, or the dog saying, I'm going to be a big brother or a big sister. But this is a whole video.
He's taken it too far. He's ruined every other guy's kind of, you know, now every guy who's going to have a wee baby has to do these wonderful things. What I want to see him is 10 months down the line, play like another minute long video Killswitch Engage, My Curse will be the track, and it will just be chaos of him like being drawn on and like picking up dirty nappies. Just like a really fast-paced montage of his demonic lifestyle forever.
Yeah, also, I don't think...
Finn will back me up as another double father.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think the pair of you also back him up and saying he's not going to have time to edit anything once he's got kids. Because
edit anything, prep for anything, eat, just sleep.
You don't need to do all the social media stuff and all that, as sweet as it was. Just stick to doing exactly what he did on the pitch, which is shove the ball up your shirt once you score a goal. Easy, job done.
Little thumb in the mouth.
Exactly. Classic. Or the little Bebeto, you know, the classic
cradle move. Beautiful, man. Oh, legendary.
If anybody wants to feel old, if you remember Bebeto doing that celebration where he does the cradling celebration, that's from the 94 World Cup. The baby whose birth he's celebrating at that point is now a professional footballer themselves. So that's how long ago that was.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Feeling old every day. But let's stick with Rangers, because good result in Europe and a good result of the weekend, beating Livingston after everyone kind of focusing on Philip Clements, unbeaten start at Rangers. And it was always going to be a tricky test at Livingston, but it didn't look like it at all, Finn, did it? Because it was pretty straightforward in the end.
It was pretty straightforward. Just a little shout out. One of the things that I liked was that I think Rangers got a fairly dubious penalty, the one where Ross was looking for the contact, which was minimal. I don't know why VAR doesn't intervene with something like that and then overrule it, because it wasn't a penalty. But I really admired the fortitude of James Tavernier to take it upon himself to gallantly miss the penalty, because he knew it shouldn't have been given, and they were still given another one later on. But yeah, Clement was making comments, I think, after the game, which I found a bit peculiar, if I'm being honest, about the nature of Thursday-Sunday games. And I don't really know what you're expecting the authorities to do. And this isn't something that's just a Rangers thing or a Clement thing or even in Scottish football. Like, this happens all over the world. You get Jurgen Klopp's moaned about it a million times before. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, we're always the 12 o'clock kickoff. I'd be like, genuinely, how much of a difference does it make if you're playing at 3 or 12? It's still the same day. And we're just about to go on the international break, so you can't play the game on a Monday night or do something else. Or if you want to move the game, speak to Sky. They're always going to put Rangers on as the lunchtime game if they're playing on a Sunday.
Well, the thing was with that, weirdly, the weekend Sky had two games on.
Back to back.
Of course, they were both involving Celtic and Rangers. But yeah, they put Rangers on the earlier one. I'm playing devil's advocate here, because there was a 3 o'clock slot, but I agree. To complain that you are playing Thursday, Sunday is a bit rich, because they could just be out of Europe and not have that problem of a Thursday, Sunday fixture list. I think he's going to want that headache right now. And every other team deals with it. Mm-hmm. And, well, yeah, you're saying other managers do complain about it. They do. And I remember last year with West Ham, David Moyes complained about it on a weekly basis, actually. So it's not uncommon, but there isn't any other space in the fixture list. There really isn't anything else you can do. And there's a lot worse that you could be complaining about.
Exactly. I think he was making the comments trying to relate in general to, I think he's seen that maybe the authorities in Scottish football don't necessarily pull out all the stops to help their clubs in Europe and give them the most amount of recovery time and things like that as well. There's definitely maybe an argument for that. I think in pre-season, or if our teams go deep into competitions, mostly they're kind of told, now you don't get the support. I remember a few seasons back when Rangers were in the Europa League final and they were asking for extra time to prepare, and they were like, nah, you just got to deal with it. Whereas in other countries, they do give teams like a week off, or they try and rearrange the fixtures to give their clubs the best chance in Europe. I remember that with when Rangers made the UEFA Cup final in 2008.
And the same thing for Celtic as well, back in 2003.
Exactly. But then Zenit got a week off before their final, and I think Porto had a week off to prepare as well. Like, these FAs totally want to do that. Yeah, exactly.
I think it's fine for big occasions like that, but when you're getting it and it's match day 4 and you're 2 weeks before international break in November, it's not the time to be complaining about it. Save that for later on.
Completely agree. And that's why I say I think there's an argument around doing it at different points of the season, qualifiers and going deep. But when you're in the group stage, we all know the format and every team has to just cope with it. So just get on with it. It's the price of success. If you want to be a successful team, you're going to be playing in more competitions.
Let's not spend too much time on this next topic, but obviously with Rangers playing on an artificial pitch. News did come out that Kilmarnock are going to upgrade, shall we say, their pitch from artificial to a grass pitch by the 25-26 season, if they can finish, of course, their new training facility before then. This is a step forward. I don't think anyone's really a big fan of artificial pitches. I think there's an argument for it. I think it can be a good thing, but not for the long term. I wonder if you guys agree. The one thing I will end on is it's going to cost a lot of money. I don't think they would have mentioned it, but I've spoken to clubs in the past that have went up to redo their stadium into a grass pitch, and it is round about the $500,000 mark, which is a lot of money to rip up your artificial pitch and put in grass. It was Sutton United I remember dealing with regarding all of that. So I kind of know the ballpark figure. It's a huge undertaking, but it's going to be a huge step forward. Don't you agree, Laura?
Yeah, I'm very much kind of like on the fence with this kind of story. I'm not really quite passionate one side or the other. I can see why clubs do it. I can completely understand the financial side of things. But then there's also the football argument as well. Like I've never played football, and I've definitely never played football on grass compared to Astral to be able to tell the differences. And I've also never dealt with injuries that deter a lot of managers putting certain players in and changing their squads accordingly, depending on where they're playing. I would like to find out more about that side of things. I'd love to speak to medical staff or coaches to find out the real in-depth reasons for that sort of thing before I kind of become pro Astro or really, really strongly against it. And I don't really have a strong opinion either way, because I can see the reasons for and against. And Philippe Clement did actually mention this as well in his post-match the other day, was there are no plastic pitches in the top flight of the big leagues around Europe. So why are we doing it? And yes, again, there is that financial aspect of it, but it doesn't look great for Scottish football to have two plastic pitches in the top flight, and it would bring us in line with with the standards across Europe. I think it would go down very well if Kelly did go ahead with this and it was to be changed as soon as possible. I think more people are going to celebrate it than condemn it. I think it's just the people who run the books are the only people that are really kind of for this, to be honest.
There was actually a study, this was actually in the NFL in America, where it was studied over the 2012 to 2016 regular season games, it says here, and research found that 16% more injuries happened per play on artificial turf compared to grass.
The interesting thing is, though, that kids nowadays, they only know artificial pitches. So I think it's quite interesting when you're looking at boys coming through of a certain age where they've just grown up never playing on grass. So
I wouldn't go that far. Surely that.
Well, yeah, because all the way through their youth academies and stuff, they'll have played through that.
But they'll be playing with their pals.
Well, I'd like to think that, but who puts jumpers for goalposts down these days? It's not quite the same as playing down the local park. I don't know. Like, yeah, I think there's arguments for and against. I did joke that because I hadn't noticed just how little top flight, like big players, hadn't played in Astro until West Ham went there last season to play in Denmark, and they played a Conference League match on Astro, and the players were. They didn't know how to deal with this. They didn't know how to prepare for it and how to warm up the day before. And I, at that point, was joking, saying, right, if this is how they're reacting, guys like Declan Rice and stuff, we need to play our next game against England. Scotland, I mean, need to play our game against England at somewhere like Rugby Park or Livy, because we could beat them if it's on an Astral pitch and that's our secret weapon. No.
I don't think you're allowed.
I am joking.
I think, but it is that thing Clement does have a decent case there, and he said both before and after the game, so it wasn't anything dependent on the result, about the surface that they're playing on. He said, I don't really care what surface we're playing on, that's the challenge ahead, we can't make it an excuse not to win a game. He's like, if we're told next week we're going to play in a car park, we have to be able to know how to play in a car park. I just want to win. And I like that mentality. But the other thing can be true at the same time, where he makes the point, he's like, in the top leagues, nobody in the top flight uses a plastic pitch. And I think that was the thing with Sutton United, because they were in the National League.
Yeah.
And you cannot enter the English Football League with an artificial surface. You have to play on grass. So that was just something you had to do. I would try and do something similar in Scotland, which is it's fine for, I think, smaller teams, community teams, especially maybe going further up the country where the weather's rotten and you need to, you can have a community asset that you can rent out during the week and do all that stuff. I think that's fine for the lower leagues. I think once you are promoted into the top flight, it should be mandated that you need to have a grass surface.
That's easy to say, but I'll just point back to the fact that I did mention earlier. It's about 500 grand to do that. And the finances aren't there to support smaller clubs to do that. So if you're promoted to the top flight, you're not going to get 500 grand to do it. That's why the likes of Harrogate, when they got promoted to the Football League, I think they then played their first season at Doncaster. And I think Sutton also played somewhere nearby for the first half of the season before it changed. So, I mean, it's not, Scotland is a completely different case compared to England. As much as the point you're making is absolutely the right one, the fortunes don't allow it. And that's why a lot of people can understand why clubs like even Falkirk and Livingston themselves play on artificial surfaces, because it's all weather proof effectively. So it's a tough one. I still think it's a good thing for Kilmarnock that they're doing this if they can get their training facility through. And I think that's something why Derek McInnes is probably progressing this club in a more kind of professional standard, which is quite interesting. And I think we're seeing that on the pitch as well. We should talk about Martin Boyle, by the way, because he took a bit of flack off of his manager, Nick Montgomery, for getting injured in his knee slide celebration scoring from Aberdeen in the League Cup. He did actually play a pivotal role at the weekend too, getting the assist for their win over Kilmarnock. I think Josh Campbell got the winning goal. But just sticking with the League Cup, Aberdeen were denied the 50-50 split, guys, and we spoke about this before. And they've also been denied a fair draw on what end they have as well. Laura, you're quite passionate of the right thing happening for the right reasons. Do you think the wrong thing is happening for the wrong reasons?
I just don't understand the logic in this at all. This is just...
She says yes.
So typical Scottish football. You have a final between two clubs at a neutral venue, and they are treating one team as more important than the other. I don't understand why it's not a neutral venue, meaning it's 50-50 from the start. It is blank canvas. You get half the ground, you get half the ground, and then we draw to find out which end you get of the ground. It just beggars belief how you can't go, well, okay, you're getting that X amount of tickets, and if you don't sell Y amount, they'll go to the opposition by this certain date. Nobody at Aberdeen would have quabbled over that, because that is completely realistic to say that. And I don't think Rangers would have complained about that either. It just seems like such a straightforward, normal way to sell tickets for a neutral event. And then when it comes to the fact that Aberdeen asked if they could draw to see what end of the stadium they get, the fact that this was just ignored is ludicrous. I'm sorry, but why? Why is it? Why do Rangers have a dedicated end of a neutral stadium? It is not their ground. They're not hosting the match. So the fact that the SPFL just ignored this and said, nope, we're not even going to listen to you, there's no logic to this at all. I'm sorry.
I just on the thing about the Rangers end and the Celtic end, I think it's more just given the amount of times that those teams will make it to semi-finals and finals. I think those terms have just come about purely out of habit and out of it's for ease of logistics in terms of policing, travel, fan movements around the ground. It's just it's easier if you're just like, any time Rangers get to a semi-final or a final, that's their part of the stadium. Anytime Celtic get there, that's their part of the stadium. It's just an easier thing to do. I get why there's a bit of ire around that, though, of just like, oh, who do you think you are? You don't own that end of the stadium. Of course they don't. I think it's just born out of that logistics thing. On the 50-50 ticket split thing, I completely agree with you. And you said this a little while ago. I don't know why the default isn't 50-50 to start with. And then if you can't sell out the allocation, it's then given to another team that might have a chance of selling out more of that. I know there's the argument that both Rangers fans and Celtic fans will say, and I'm just saying this is to play devil's advocate, where they will say Aberdeen can't sell out Pittodrie most weeks. And that's, you know, 20 odd thousand or whatever. So why should they get more than that for a cup final? And why should a supporter who's coming to a cup final, it might be the only football match that they go to in 5 years, say they're not going every week. Why should they get a ticket to a cup final ahead of fans who are going every week, putting money into the game every week? But out of fairness, I think my understanding of how it is most fair is if it starts off 50-50, you have to give teams getting to a national final fair split. If they can't sell it, then you start going to different proportions of ticketing.
See, on that argument though, Finn, and I do understand that, because I mean, I think we all as football fans, if we go to games regularly, we go, well, why should you get a ticket over me? Like, I'm going to be in that war come the Euros next summer, and I'm going to be analysing everyone I see that's going to games going, wait a minute, were you in Georgia during the hard times? You know, like, and it becomes this mental battle of, well, I deserve it more than you. And I'm half joking here, but that's a problem, that's a headache for the clubs to deal with within their own sections. It is not about, well, that Rangers fan goes to every game week in, week out, and that Aberdeen fan doesn't, because it shouldn't be a competition between each other. It should be that Rangers fan gets a ticket before that Rangers fan because he goes more often than the other. That's just a battle within your percentage of the ground, and it shouldn't matter. If Aberdeen left 1,000 tickets empty and they couldn't sell them, that's their problem. But it doesn't mean that Rangers fans then go, oh, well, I could have filled that seat. I don't think that's the same argument you can be having here.
There's also, there is the thing of, you look at the earlier rounds of this same competition, and it's like there were, I think, maybe about 12,000 empty seats at Ibrox for the game against Morton, probably about the same for the quarterfinal against Livy. So Rangers weren't selling out their stadium for earlier rounds of the competition. So then why should you get a bigger percentage for the final? I can see arguments on both sides, but I think we're probably all agreed in a consensus of, we don't understand why it doesn't start as 50-50. And then if you can't sell out, give more tickets to another set of supporters if they can sell it.
We can at least both agree that, thankfully, Aberdeen fans do have something to look forward to, considering the result at the weekend when they got absolutely smashed by Celtic 6-0. So they've got a cup final to look forward to. It's still going to be a great spectacle no matter what. There's just always going to be those little gripes. But the result at the weekend was really bad. I mean, I know it was a bit odd. I kind of don't agree with a lot of what was said about Aberdeen with their point on Thursday against Pauk. I thought they played excellent, but I just don't get this idea of, like, it was a positive result. It was a great performance, and it's, you know, it's good to finish 2-2, but inevitably they are out of Europe. I think they are out of Europe.
Yeah,
aren't
they? Yeah. The wording was strange, because it was very much a celebration at full time of, this is a positive result. Not, it's a good result, it was a positive result.
Yeah, I do think they should have beaten them home and away.
Well, the thing was, it was a good result. For any Scottish team to go away in Europe, that, especially when you're not Celtic or Rangers, any of the lower teams to go away in Europe and to win, of course it's a great result. And we should be celebrating that. And I was enjoying it watching it, and I felt happy for them at full time. Mm-hmm. But to use the terms positive and words like when they've just been literally knocked out of the competition was a bit wrongly placed.
Strange.
But it was odd. I think Aberdeen's emotions have been all over the place. I think this season they've got into Europe, they did horrendous in some games and should have picked up points when they didn't. They've been really disappointed in some matches, picking up points other places where they didn't expect to, performances they didn't expect to. Remember the one away to Frankfurt, and then in the league it's just been horrendous some weeks. It's been very up and down, and I think having that cup final to look forward to, I think they might be fearing it a little bit, but at least it gives them something to look forward to.
Aye, completely. It's funny with Celtic, on the other hand, losing 6-0 in Europe and then beating Aberdeen 6-0. I did enjoy Chris Boyd's comments on Sky Sports, Finn, when he was talking about how Aberdeen seemed to just effectively lie down for Celtic, but they'll definitely be up for the game after the international break when they play Rangers. You probably agree with that.
Well, there's, I think, borne out just by the statistics, I think Aberdeen do have a lot better record against Rangers over the last number of years than they do against Celtic. It's pretty non-existent against Celtic. But I do wonder, because it was 6-0, but three of those goals came in injury time, didn't they? The 9 minutes of injury time. I think they're just absolutely shattered after the week. Again, we've said it before, if you want to be a successful team, you want to be playing European football, you need to learn how to cope with playing midweek and playing at the weekend and having a squad capable of doing that and lasting to the end of games. So yeah, I think it'll be absolutely gutted that they got such a turning over in the end at Celtic Park.
Right, well, in the wonderful world of podcast editing, we're allowed to insert some breaking news because we had finished the recording. But yeah, thanks, Ross County, for deciding to sack Malky Mackay on Wednesday midday-ish. Yeah, the time is over for Malky Mackay at Ross County. It hadn't been a great time in Dingwall of late. 8 matches without a win, which equals a record from last season as well. So not a huge surprise that County have decided to get rid, especially when they, you know, look back at last season and relying on penalties to get to survive in the Premiership via penalties in the playoffs. So we move on, and this podcast will have to move on, but we will reflect on this decision in the next pod. Now, are you excited for next summer? I'm excited for next summer. Everyone is excited for next summer, but not as much as this man. Maybe Laura is a bit more excited. Okay, Scotland go into their final 2 qualifying matches having already qualified, which is a wonderful feeling. Steve Clarke's named his 23-man squad to face Georgia on Thursday and Norway on Sunday, but even though the job is done, there's still a lot of expectation on the national team's shoulders, and there's also a few decisions that need to be made before these games. So to help us get through all of these questions, we've brought back our old pal, Gordon Sheikh, from the Tartan Scarf. Did I get that right, Gordon? I always get worried seeing you.
You'll get it. You'll get it right next time. What was it?
Shiach. Shiach. Ah. Apologies, my friend. Apologies. But look, Gordon, it's funny. We're actually recording this on Sunday, the 12th of November, which is actually exactly 3 years to the day that we ended our major competition hoodoo and we qualified for Euro 2020, the famous penalty save from David Marshall. Why haven't we got a statue yet?
Yeah, absolutely incredible. I can't believe it's been only 3 years, especially when you think about what's happened since and what's happened, you know, obviously in my personal life as well. You know, since then I've gotten married and had a baby. So I can quite confidently say that was probably the best night of my life 3 years ago tonight. And then you look back on it and you think, I literally watched the game on Zoom with my family and a couple of pals and then scrolled Twitter till 4 in the morning. Like, it shows how low the bar was for best nights of your life. That was it.
Good for you, Gordon. I've had 2 kids and I've got engaged as well, but that was still the best night of my life. Currently.
Yeah. But again, though, you look at what's happened since then, where this team has gone, the fact that they've been to a major finals, then finished 2nd in a qualifying campaign for the first time in 20-odd years, and then qualified automatically for another major finals. And we can go into that tournament next summer with real, genuine confidence. And I mean, again, wind the clock back 12 months to when this draw was made. And look, people who know me, people who follow the Tartan Scarf will know that I've always been the positive guy, always been looking on the bright side, looking to build and be proactive and look how we're improving and getting better. This time last year, I hated this draw. I was despondent with this draw. I was miserable with this draw. We'd fought tooth and nail to get to pot 2, and then you pull the best striker in world football out of pot 3. I was brutally miserable. And then you look at the way the fixture computer did it, and you think, well, geez, all right. 2nd last game, we're in Tbilisi. We couldn't possibly fuck it up a 3rd time in there, could we? And then Norway at home, and you're thinking, well, okay, we'll be desperately hoping to get something into Tbilisi where we've, you know, had our troubles in the past. And then it'll be a final shootout last day against Norway to hopefully finish 2nd. So the fact to be coming into this camp just now, having already qualified, I still can't quite get over that. And I still don't quite, I think it's easy for people to look on the negative side. And I've seen this whisper around a little bit, oh, well, we're 3 losses in a row with the England games, Spain and then France. two of them were friendlies. Who cares? Like, we're still in a phenomenally, phenomenally good place with this team.
It's funny because I know how positive you are. Finn, you were also quite positive before this whole process. We all know Laura was aggressive with her process of this. Like, no, we should be beating Spain. No, we should be beating them 3-0. What's the problem with that? We shouldn't be looking for draws. But me and you, Finn, as much as you were probably more positive, we were kind of trying to be realistic. But this has exceeded all expectation that we can now go into these next two games almost thinking, well, could we play a different way? Is Clark going to stay the same? He probably is. But what's your thoughts going into these next two games?
It's just really nice to be going in without the worry. It's such an alien feeling. The norm over the last 20-odd years is we actually play quite well in the final games because we're already out, so there's no pressure. And we can do things like go to Croatia and win. You know, I remember like Gordon Strachan, I think his first game in charge was a dead rubber against Croatia. It was that Robert Snodgrass got the winner and we beat them 1-0 in Croatia. Like, just odd things always used to happen like that. It was always when it came down to the business end of qualifying in a group that we really struggled. So it's nice to be going in without that pressure this time. I wouldn't expect Clark to be going into it looking at as two free hits almost. I think it's really important to use this international break and these two games as well as we can, especially given the players that we don't have in the squad that are kind of regulars. I think it's a real chance in competitive games to play around with the squad a little bit and see what happens. But what's really nice overall is that when I was a kid growing up, I was used to Scotland being at major tournaments, as it really was for generations before, but it was like the last time. So like growing up in the 90s, I don't really remember Italia 90 because I was only four or five when that happened. But I was definitely aware of the Euros in 92 and we went at 94, but Euro 96 and France 98, that was like my sweet spot of being a young football fan and just absorbing everything. So off the back of that, it was really hard to get used to then 2 decades of absolute unfettered misery in qualifying. And watch it, the worst one, I still will always say the worst one was Euro 2016, which was the one that Northern Ireland qualified for. So to watch all the home nations qualify and us not be there was just the most excruciating pain. And then going seeing that was the one I think where Wales went on to the semi-finals and you're just like, why can't that be us? But the brilliant thing is Steve Clark has brought us to that space now, I think, of like, why can't that be us? I think that is us. Like this, we're going into hopefully now qualifying campaigns, not being like, can we qualify? But when we qualify, when's it going to be and how well are we going to do it? And this run's just been magnificent, literally historic, record-breaking, you know, like the opening with five wins. No Scotland team's ever done that. None of the teams with Dalglish or Law or Souness or anyone else like that. It's been this squad of players and Clark's to be, he's a very good manager. He's to be commended for that. And I think he'll be using these games, like I said, as an important marker for players to stake their claim potentially going forward, because after this, we've not got a huge amount in between the tournament starting. So yeah, we'll need to start looking at the squad properly and where we can get players coming in to fill out those positions for the plane.
The big problems that we hope we won't have when we do go to the Euros is the ones that we have now. The injury list, we've never ever faced such a bad one like this. So no captain, really, Andy Robertson. I wonder who would really hold the... Who is vice-captain, Gordon? Who would take that?
It's McGinn.
Armband? So it would be McGinn.
Yeah, McGinn.
But then
McGinn
that whole left side is like a gaping hole right now. You know, the likes... Kieran Tierney isn't available. So, you know, there's difficult spots to fill. No John Souter, no Kevin Nisbet as well, but also no Angus Gunn, who's been excellent coming in since Craig Gordon's injury. So there's loads of little holes to fill. So John McGinn takes the captaincy. Where else do you think there could be interesting marks to be made going into these next two games?
I mean, I think Finn makes a great point that, you know, time is fairly limited between now and the Euros. Obviously, we've got these two games now. We'll have two friendlies in March, and then you're looking at probably two friendlies pre-tournament when we've probably already at least named our long list squad for the finals. So I think the most important thing for Steve Clarke coming into these two games especially is to maintain that sense of jeopardy in the squad, that there are still things to fight for. Obviously, had we only lost 1-0 in Spain, then we would have had the head-to-head advantage and actually finishing top of the group would have been well within our own grasp. That's probably gone now, given that Spain will likely win their next two games. But I think if you're Clarke and you're sitting in that dressing room, you're telling these players, you know, if you want to go to the finals next summer, you know, this is your chance. Like, these are your chances and you won't get many of them. And frankly, with the amount of players we've got missing, it's an even bigger opportunity for guys like your Greg Taylors or Anthony Ralstons or guys like that to say, look, I want to be there next summer. I can't miss out on this. I need to impress. So I think that will hopefully continue to drive the performances to a really high level, because yeah, you're right, we haven't faced an injury crisis like this under Steve Clarke, but I just think that gives these guys all the more opportunity to cement their place next summer. Because I mean, look at what happened with the sliding doors moments of Euro 2020, when you had McLean injured, Jack injured, the squad got boosted a little bit, we brought in Nathan Patterson, we brought in Billy Gilmore. Those two guys have never looked back for Scotland, so the chances will be there for guys to come in and impress.
It's funny because I think Josh Doig is a really interesting one to come in. I know he was obviously picked for under-21s action, but the need for him to step up and be ready when he's called for is absolutely massive. I know he's not doing too well, or his club, Verona, isn't doing too well in the Serie A, but the likes of Ben Doak is on the wings. He's the kind of player that I think you're maybe alluding to that could come in by the time the Euros comes around. But Finn, there's some big holes to fill still. I mean, these players, are they, who really needs to stake their claim in this little opportunity that's available?
To me, one of the biggest ones, because I think Angus Gunn is pretty much nailed on as the number one now. I think he's the preferred choice in goals. But in terms of a proper choice for second choice keeper, or one that's going to be pushing Gunn to that, I think that spot's wide open, most likely between Xander Clarke and Liam Kelly. I feel like I need to be representing Laura a little bit here because I know Liam's her boy, but I think he would probably be my shout of the two. I just think in terms of an actual goalkeeper, I think he edges it slightly for me over Xander Clarke.
Same, I agree.
So I think I would expect, and also given he started the game, I know they both had a half against France, but I think because he started the game against France, I would see him in Clarke's eyes as maybe farther up in the pecking order as well. But I think if Kelly starts the first game, I would expect him to start the second game as well. I think Clarke will try and keep that continuity going. And if he does, then and he performs well, I think he'll be looking for definitely a clean sheet with Georgia. And if you can keep out Holland as well, you know, that's him faced like Mbappe and Haaland in two of his first three games in a Scotland shirt potentially. So I think that's a real area. I also think as well, just off the back of you talking about Josh Doig as well, it's something that other countries I think have been really good at. And I've often used the example of England's an obvious one to make because they're so close, but they have a much wider pool of talent. But Wales, I think, have been really good at this, which is it's almost like succession planning. It's like when you look to areas that you are actually strong in, but you're like, but when they go, because they will go, mm-hmm. how do you blood in somebody to take over that position? And I think given the rich talent that we've got in the left back or left wing back or left centre back area with Tierney and Robertson, who do you look to come in? And I think Josh Doig looks potentially like a natural successor in that position as well. So it will be good for him, even if he doesn't start, just to start being part of the squad. I would hope that he gets some minutes at some point, mm-hmm. because with the greatest respect, I don't see Greg Taylor, and definitely not Anthony Ralston, as that long-term succession in that position. I think Josh Doig's has a much greater potential to be that top level player akin to Tierney and Robertson. Lewis Ferguson as well, we've talked about it before. I'd just love to see him getting more minutes over the next couple of internationals as well, because he's just been electric for Bologna in the last couple of months.
Yeah, totally agree. I think talking about these two games that are happening, I'm more interested really in the game against Norway, Gordon, because the atmosphere is going to be so good no matter the result.
Yeah, it will be absolutely incredible. I mean, obviously the last the last home game in the campaign was obviously the game against Georgia. And even after like a minute of that game, the fans were already singing, "Germany, Germany, we're off to Germany." And I was, I even at that stage, as positive as I was, as much as I was thinking, we're going to do this, I still thought, oh, guys, that's too early. Oh, I'm not sure about that. But now, yes, you're right. Atmosphere will be absolutely fantastic from the beginning. Obviously, I believe there's going to be another TIFO display at the game, which obviously Laura and her band have been very much involved in, which is fantastic to see. And again, look, even though I've said like I was very apprehensive about this campaign at the beginning, you know, when tickets went on sale to buy all the games individually, I very specifically bought tickets for this game against Norway right in the corner flag, right down at the very front, because I thought to myself, if there's that post-match lap of honour and we're celebrating, we've qualified for the Euros, that is going to be the best view, best seat in the house. So I just absolutely can't wait to be there on Sunday. And yeah, it's just going to be a brilliant night, regardless of the result, of course.
Totally. I am actually going to be in Scotland on Sunday. I haven't told the missus yet if I could manage a ticket, but if I do, I'm definitely coming up because I can't wait. It's one of those things, isn't it great to just go into a game and just know that everyone there is going to be happy no matter what? Laura won't if we lose. Laura, the Pied Piper of Tifos and fan ambience, she will be raging even if it's a draw. But that will subside for anyone who's, you know, aggressively competitive. That will subside because the final whistle, it will just become so much fun and everyone will be talking about, are you going to Germany? How's your flights? How's your accommodation? How's your savings?
Do you know what? Honestly, like the thing I'm most excited about, and I have occasion, is I'm most excited about the draw. And it's not even just to see who we get paired up against. It's the fact that it's a proper draw for a proper tournament and we're actually in it properly. Because if you look back at the last two tournaments for the Euros, our playoff had obviously been postponed. So when the finals draw was made, it was just playoff winner C. And you're looking at it thinking, oh, well, that might be us if it's us. And we didn't know. And the exact same for the World Cup, because obviously our game against Ukraine had been postponed. Again, it was a little ball with Ukraine or Wales or Scotland. And again, you're thinking, oh, that's us, but it also might not be. Whereas for this one, fully, properly, we're two-footed, we're there. A tiny little ball with a tiny little Scotland flag inside it. I can't wait. I'm so excited for that moment.
The 2nd of December is the draw.
It's a Saturday night, big Saturday night.
Big Saturday night. Get the cans in. But Finn, just give us your little final thoughts on the likes of the draw and stuff like that. And you said it, Gordon, it is a proper tournament, this. It's not like before where we had two games at Hampden. I know we qualified for a major competition, but to then have to play at home, during that, it's not got the same feeling. There's no the same gravitas to the whole occasion. Now that we're going to experience all of this, and hopefully we'll be working at it, that would be pretty fun and dreadful at the same time. Yeah. But everything around it, Finn, it's going to be great. But there's also expectation. We have to see ourselves really competitive. You said it. You see us now as, you know, like Wales, although we don't have a world-class striker. do you think we'll do better this time around?
Yeah, I just don't. I don't.
Regardless
really
of the draw,
I think we've got every reason to go in. Like we've beat Spain at home in qualifying, and if you just remember back a couple of months, we were gutted we didn't beat them in Spain. That's something Spain have only ever done once. They've lost once in European Championship qualifying at home, and that was to France, I think, in like 92. So the fact that we came so close to that and we were gutted we didn't get the chance to do that just shows how far we've come. I know you guys are saying like, oh, regardless of the result and everything, I think we've still got so much PTSD and scar tissue as Scotland fans. I think we're kind of going into this even tempering the expectations of two matches where we know we've already qualified, just being like, well, if we lose, you know, it'll be okay because we've still qualified and that's the party. I don't think Clark will allow the squad to have the mentality of that, like I said, this being two free hits. I think very much they'll see it as two games that they want to win and finish totally as strongly as possible, because with international football and the lulls that you have and the momentum that you can take over months, either way, positive or negative, it's really important, I think, to finish strongly, to look at this as 6 points we want to be taking and to try and aim for that. so that we can carry that momentum into 2024. And it's huge. It is so excruciatingly exciting. I know we will talk about this more over the coming months, and we'll do so much preview stuff ahead of Germany. Mm-hmm. But it's not just our names being in the draw and being part of a proper tournament. I do think that this, in terms of modern football, is sadly, I think, one of the last times we'll see a one country specific tournament. So it's not just being part of that, but the fact it's in Germany, it's just they do everything around football so well. It's the perfect size of country for you to basically be based anywhere and travel around. They put fan culture as high up as anything else. I know UEFA will probably seek to strip a lot of that away from the experience, but they do brilliant stuff around transport, logistics, beer pricing. These are small things, but they're not small things, and they all add to the atmosphere. And I just think for a tournament like this in such an amazing locale, mm-hmm. for the Tartan Army to be there and be part of it, it's just going to be absolutely phenomenal. Cannot wait.
No competition is correct without us Scots being there. Just one final more question. Would you take England in your group, Gordon? Are you just sick of them?
Personally, no, probably not. Yeah. I think it would be nice to
mix
it up. It would, of course, it would be. Of course, it would be. But yeah, look, I mean, just to sort of pick up on what you guys are saying. Like, I think 2 years ago we went to that Euros, and obviously no player in the squad, and no and Clark as well as manager had never managed at a major finals. You know, I think we went in inexperienced, understandably, maybe a touch naive at that level. We got a lot of experience out of it. We've gone on to bigger things. We've gone to a World Cup playoff. We've now qualified automatically. You look at the experiences that this team have gone through as a group, you know, it stands them in such good stead that they know fine well, if they're tested in a match in the Euros, they can look at each other and think, we beat Spain together. We beat Denmark at home. We've been away from home and won big games. We've beaten the teams we're supposed to beat. We've been expected to go to the Faroes and win, and we've done it. We've overcome all these challenges. We've won penalty shootouts. That I don't see this group going there. They're not going there for a good time next summer. They're going there to make their mark. And, you know, Andrew, you mentioned earlier about sort of some of the exalted names of the past who have worn the dark blue of Scotland. And we've had legends. We've had genuine world-class legends of this game that we play. We've played for the last 150 years. No Scotland team has ever been to the knockout stage of a major finals. And I genuinely think that is the target next summer. And do that, and this team belongs in that conversation as the best Scotland team of all time. And I just, that's what they're going to do. That is the target. That's what they're going to do. You spoke about Wales.
Give me tingles.
Get there. Who knows?
I'm getting all tingly. I'm so excited.
It is.
Smashing. Right. Well, we're going to win the Euros then. Can't wait.
Buzzing.
Best European team ever. That'll be it. Oh, God. Calm down, Andrew. Calm down.
Football,
bloody
hell.
Laura, we're finished. Are you happy?
No, I'm sad.
Oh.
It's the highlight of my week.
Thank you for turning up to this one. Finn, good to see you as always. Cheers to Gordon Sheehan. Get it right for you, pal, for this week's podcast. Fingers crossed Steve Clark and Scotland can end our Euro qualification on a high. Even though we're high as kites right now, let's absolutely sink Georgia, the money gets that they are, and Norway for that matter. What a party it's going to be in Hampden, by the way. If you hadn't listened, Laura, I am in Scotland this weekend, so maybe.
Also, you're looking for a spare ticket.
Have you got one?
No.
As if I'm getting
are you
that
paying?
Pint. Yes, in pints.
Now I'm listening.
There we go. Can I get quick score predictions, Laura, against Georgia and then Norway?
2-0 against Georgia and 2-0 against Norway.
Ooh. Finn, quickly.
I'm going to go 2-1 against Georgia, with Georgia taking the lead, but we're going to banish those demons by coming back from the jaws of defeat. And then I reckon 4-0 against Norway. I think their pants, we're going to absolutely pump them and it'll be a party. Yes.
Happy days. Right, well, if you are listening, your support is key to this podcast as we try to keep it going. We do it all ourselves. So do subscribe if you haven't already. And if you get your mum and dad and your auntie and uncle to subscribe as well, that'd be class. You can get us on YouTube as well. Subscribe to that because that's class. Twitter, TikTok and whatever newfangled social media Laura's got us into. I'm too old for this. So it's time for you all to go and listen to something else now. Goodbye.